Welcome to Real Talk, a film studies podcast meant to help translate and examine concepts of film for viewers and filmmakers alike. Today's episode will cover five key words that fall under an ambiguous form of understanding. Let's dive right in. Let's first look at the term audience. Typically seen as just a group of spectators, the term holds a more ambiguous significance regarding the field of cinema. It takes on a more abstract role as presented by academics like Stephen Hughes and Henry Jenkins. Hughes refers to the term as an enigmatic paradox, as it entails the needed role of the audience fills in experiencing media, but also suggests that the scope of said role isn't only defined by the purpose. He also deems it as an abstract perspective that transcends those of the individuals and rather encompasses the collective whole. Jenkins, on the other hand, views the audience as an ever-evolving, empowered enjoyer of media with the title of New Audience. This entails the notion that the audience can be a more active rather than passive participant as cinema continues to evolve and interact with other forms of media. This is supported by the statement on cinema having always been many things. There have all been many spaces where films have been rejected, many experiences with going to the movies, many ways the audience has participated in the experiences of movies, and many different connections between film and other media platforms. Ultimately, these more abstract concepts surrounding the term audience demonstrate a more open-ended approach to their ability to influence films. Now let's look at the term of text. Text can be seen just as written form, but in actuality, it can surpass written form and be any type of media as it refers to a unit of meaning for interpretation and understanding, at least seen by the academic gray. What makes text hard to comprehend is the contextual nature that it is formed within. Gray states that texts are never truly discrete because meaning is always contextual, relative and situated in a particular place and time. This makes text interpretively elastic by nature. Some may even argue that the elasticity of interpretation may extend beyond the intended meaning. Katyal views its use through the lens of a semiotic democracy, in which it can empower individuals to add to rich and expansive cultural fabric of a true public domain, where everyone participates equally. Now let's focus on the term of myth. Myth refers to a signification method in which we communicate and agree upon associated meanings. Inherently, it points to an image, object, or phrase being linked to a concept which feels natural and not forced. McDougall and Pollard present this notion with, what we have agreed culturally that things have come to mean at the level of what Bates calls myth. It is then demonstrated through signs and codes that are polysemy, having multiple meanings and usages based on the context. For example, an image can be interpreted in different ways, but ultimately the conventions we have associated with certain aesthetics could persuade our assumptions toward a direction. McDougall and Pollard support this by analyzing an image through different perspectives, but ultimately conclude that the high-key lighting, the blue sky, and the blue sea, and the innocuous Breton striped dress certainly all oppose a sinister interpretation. This shows an inherent bias aspect to established conventions as they seemingly make us ignore other possible perspectives. This can be seen in the film Matuan, where historical figures like Sid Hatfield are depicted as mythical heroes in scenes like the home eviction. Yet another term that is vital to understand now is the term of encoding and decoding. This is a non-straightforward process that involves both producers and audiences to build and establish meaning. Typically, the producer is seen as the creator, while the audience is seen as the interpreter. The role of the audience, however, seems to encompass more than just that. Philip Elliott interprets it as the viewer being both the source and the receiver of the television message. This view makes them just as vital to production process as they are to the interpretive one. Producers generally want their work to be interpreted in a specific way, but that ignores the varied perspectives of the viewers. Hal brings up producers and states that the ideal is perfectly transparent communication. Instead, what they have to confront is systemically distorted communication. Finally, there's a term of class contestation. The capitalistic and individual-centric mindsets within the class system perpetuate its structure and enable further struggle within class divisions. Clarke described this as class contestation, in which people struggle across class lines to survive, to speak out, or to climb. He goes on to note that it also involves struggling over the explanation as to why things are the way they are. This manages to be filtered into the use of representation within media. Clarke also mentions that film does not just reflect these struggles, it helps script them. So we ask, what is class? How is it made to disappear? It gives us the ability to examine film beyond the veil, allowing us to analyze the portrayal of class and its effect on viewers. This concludes this week's episode of Real Talk, a short yet informationally brimmed episode. I hope it assists you all in your future endeavors when analyzing film. Until next time, have a great day.